WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
What better place to start than the Alabama-Texas game? So, J-Lo, final score 20, Texas 19. It was a little close for comfort for me, but I'm interested.
I was nervous the whole game. I honestly thought it was going to go into overtime for a second.
Yeah, me too. Whenever Bryce Young put on that Superman cape and finally took us down there late in the fourth quarter, did something similar to what he did last year in the Iron Bowl to send Alabama into overtime and give us a shot to win that game. He did it again this year, and I think it just goes to show you why he is the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. But like you said, definitely had me nervous the entire time I was watching it. I think there are some genuine concerns for Alabama. Just when you're looking at the play on offense, on defense, I think we ended up with 15 penalties throughout the entire game. That's some of the most in the Nick Saban era, I think, since 2011. Not looking great.
But in the interview, if you watch the interview, Nick Saban did say he was like, he feels as if Texas was a test and they barely passed the test. So with that being said, I feel like this week they're going to be in the film room a lot. They're going to be at practice. They're going to have to.
Oh, yeah. You know that practice this week is going to be brutal for those players. I would not want to be an Alabama football player this week. But like you said, this was a test. He addressed that this morning in his press conference. And I think that's exactly what this game was. Texas had some record numbers in their stadium for this game. So it's going to give those Alabama players a great chance to experience what it's going to be like whenever we go into Arkansas on October 1st, because that is going to be a magnetic environment. We go to Death Valley this year to play LSU. That's going to be a very tough environment. To Neyland Stadium to play top 20 Tennessee. That's going to be a tough environment. So, you know, to get this test early and to walk away with the win, I think was a great great opportunity for this Alabama football team. Just to break down some of these stats, you know, rushing yards, 161 yards off 24 carries for a 6.7 average for the team. That's pretty good. You know, I've heard a lot of Alabama fans criticize the run game and the offensive line, but when you look at the team's total, that's not bad. Now, there's a caveat. You take Jace McClellan's long run of 81 yards off, and Bryce Young scrambles. He had 60 yards for a 3.8 average for the rest of the running back stable there. So, you know, not ideal, but like we've said, this was, you know, the first real test that Alabama has faced, and I think that they're just going to be stronger for it.
And I'm really glad that they didn't have to lose it for them to like understand this test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's better to taste your own blood a little bit with a close with a close win than just get flat out beat. Because it's hopefully going to be a motivating point for this team, as sort of an emphasis of reflection. Because I think there was a lot of things that they can sort of take and grow and learn from. Another thing I wanted to point out. Receivers, you know, when you were watching this game cast, Joel Klatt, one of the commentators for Fox, talked about these receivers and their inability to get open and their inability to create these deep downfield plays. You know, I'm not so sure that's a fair assessment. It's 213 yards for 27 receptions, 7.9 average. Again, that's okay. Also a caveat, you know, our top receiver was a running back, Jahmyr Gibbs, you know, the dynamic transfer. Exactly. He had the lone receiving touchdown. But when you look at the rest of the team, 18 receptions, 139 yards, zero touchdowns. That includes, you know, Jace McClellan and Cameron Latu. The receivers alone, 13 receptions for 109 yards. So again, not great, but one important thing to know for Alabama fans is JoJo Earl and Tyler Harrell, the transfer from Louisville, are recovering, and there was a report made today that they could be back by October 1st for that Arkansas game. Both of those guys bring elite speed, and that deep downfield passing attack that so many people were expecting to see in this game that wasn't really there, I think those two guys can probably bring that.
And I feel like that Arkansas game, that's also going to be a really good atmosphere for them. And I'm glad that we played Texas first before we play Arkansas.
Yes, Arkansas went yesterday and pretty much handled South Carolina. You know, I forget what the exact stat was, but they ended up running the ball an insane amount of times. It's obvious what Kendall Briles wants to do, and that is establish the run for Arkansas. They're a run-first team, and they were one of the top running teams last year in the nation. I think that they're looking to do the same again this year, and I feel like they'll probably end up doing it. They had 65 carries for 295 yards with five touchdowns on the ground. So Alabama got a great test against Bijan Robinson this past week. Bijan Robinson, one of the nation's best running backs for Texas, because like you said, that Arkansas game is going to test this Alabama run defense coming up October 1st. So, you know, the offensive game plan. I've heard so many people talk about, oh, Bill O'Brien, he had a terrible game plan. I think we need to hold our horses here a little bit with the criticism of Bill O'Brien, right? This was only the second game of the season. You overhaul essentially the entire wide receiving core. Your top three wide receivers leave for the NFL draft. Your top running back leaves for the NFL draft.
I think that's what no one's looking at. Like, Jameson and Mechie all left. Like, we had a bunch of people get drafted last year, and a lot of people transferred in. And then this was like the first two games, I feel like, were really easy for them. Well, my first game was really easy for them. And I feel like this second game was more of a test, and they had to, like, really bring their A game. And a lot of people are criticizing them for it, but we don't really know what they go through at them practices and stuff.
Right. You know, I've always thought Bill O'Brien was a really excellent second half offensive coordinator. You know, coming in, you see his game plan. Texas has a really excellent defensive game plan, and it matches up really well with what Bill O'Brien wanted to do. And he wanted to run the football, and it just wasn't quite working. They wanted to take some shots in the passing game, but Texas had an excellent passing defensive game plan. But you go into halftime, he makes adjustments. The fourth quarter, they play a clean game, zero penalties on either side of the football. And obviously, Bill O'Brien orchestrated that impressive drive with less than 2 minutes left in the game that put Will Reichard in position to kick that game-winning field goal. So, you know, I would say hold off on the criticism of Bill O'Brien. I mean, he's the guy who led Bryce Young to a Heisman Trophy quarterback season last year, hung 45 on what was a historic Georgia defense in the SEC championship game. But we saw Alabama sort of do a similar thing last year in the second week, going up against Florida. They only win by two and had to have a late defensive stop to stop Florida. And Alabama ended up making it to the national championship game last year. So I think this was a great test for this Alabama team, who just need to continue to improve in certain areas. The offensive line definitely continue to improve. When I look at this O-line, there wasn't a single player that I thought got beat physically. It was more schematics, right? And maybe some more mental errors. It was an extremely tough environment, the crowd noise in Texas and Austin. So when you were watching that game, in particular on offense, just what did you see, especially in that offensive line?
I feel as if it could have been way better than it should have been. It should have been more, you can kind of tell that they should have put more effort and work into it than they executed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely, you know, their execution was one of those areas where, you know, you're probably looking for some improvement there over from last year. That right side of the offensive line last year was a problem the whole season. You're hoping and praying this Vanderbilt transfer, Tyler Steen, you know, former five-star offensive lineman, J.C. Latham, they come in at those tackle spots. You have returners at every position on the interior of the O-line. You bring in a new offensive line coach, which I'm very excited about, and I think Nick Saban is too. You listen to him talk about Coach Wolford over the fall, very excited about Coach Wolford and what he can bring. You know, the expectations for the offensive line was that they're going to be like that 2020 Outland Trophy Award-winning offensive line, the best offensive line in the country. And they didn't play like that against Texas. But like we said, it's early on in the season, and they bring in a new coach.
And then right? I also feel like most teams, when they play Alabama, they play with their heart. And Alabama has to play with their heart weekly. And I feel as if this was a bad game. There will be better games. And I feel like Texas just had their offensive and defense, everybody just ready for Alabama, because nobody really knew, I feel like, what was going to come from this season.
Yeah, definitely Alabama gets everyone's best shot. And Nick Saban has talked about that for God knows how many years, about how his players are going to be hunted by these other teams. They're the team that they circle on their schedule, and they bring their A game when
like,
they play Alabama.
Blocking Will Anderson.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a bit of a somber weekend for Alabama fans as they watch that game and then look forward to the rest of the season. Some difficult stretches, you know, some difficult road games. It's been tough this past two seasons for Alabama on the road, you know, losing to A&M at Kyle Field, that close win against Florida in the swamp. It's been tough, but I think Nick Saban is going to get this team figured out. They're going to improve because they're incredibly talented. Nick Saban talked today about having to do a better job as coaches of putting his players in a position to succeed, and I think that you're going to see that coming up this week. Again, I would hate to be one of those players at practice this week. I can't imagine how often they're going to have to run. But I expect some improvement going in this week against UNL Monroe.
And I think they'll show it because they know all eyes are on them.
Yes,
especially
definitely.
After that close game.
Yeah, yeah. And Bama fans, man, they're brutal, you know. You don't blow somebody out when you're expected to. I think this was a 21-point spread is what it closed at in Vegas. Yeah, especially living here on campus, you get to hear some colorful language used even when we win, which is so crazy to me. I'm like, hey, you win by 1 point. If you win every game by 1 point, you're undefeated. Yeah, that's true.
Literally.
Yeah. You win every game by 1 point, you're undefeated. So take the win, because a win is a win. But it's also an excellent learning opportunity for this team to go back and check the tape.
Know to improve mentally and physically.
Yes, definitely. Check the tape. Hopefully use this as a guide for whenever they're in those tough road environments. Because a lot of the mistakes they made, those 15 penalties, crowd noise, you know, I know Nick Saban said after the game that crowd noise doesn't really affect the defense, so they're going to have to start playing cleaner on defense, especially that secondary. One of the things that concerned me was multiple calls on our corners for pass interference. You know, there's a lot of competition at that corner position. They got four guys right now that they think can play. So I'm looking to see who can continue to play well and clean. You know, you have to turn around. You have to play the ball or else you're going to get a pass interference call. And there were some situations in the end zone where I would take a pass interference call over a touchdown. But, you know, in midfield, pass interference calls, they just kept shooting themselves in the foot. The total ended up being, I think, 15 penalties for 100 yards. You know the rule. You give them 100 yards and penalties, that's a touchdown. That's 6 points. So definitely not the cleanest game Alabama has ever played under Nick Saban. And I have a feeling next game against UNL Monroe will be a lot cleaner. You know, especially when you listen to Nick Saban's press conference today. He said he doesn't forget. So he remembers what happened against UNL Monroe back in 2027. That loss to UNL Monroe, it was tough. All right, well, got a lot more to cover, and you are listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back, Tuscaloosa, to the student section. I am your host, Aiden McGuirt. I'm here with the lovely Jalen Mines talking a little bit of college football. So, we left off with Alabama-Texas again, nerve-wracking game, but not too far away from Austin, where Alabama was taking on the Texas Longhorns. A&M Aggies had some struggles of their own against Appalachian State. So, obviously, you go back to the start of this season, Jayla, what were your expectations for this Texas A&M team?
I honestly thought Texas A&M was going to bring it this year, even though they had a new team. I feel as if the coaches still had the same energy from last year. I just really thought they were going to bring it. I didn't really see that this game. They didn't live up to the expectations that I had for them.
Definitely not. And by not living up to the expectations, she means a loss, 17-14. To Sunbelt Appalachian State out of Boone, North Carolina. That was definitely a tough game to watch. Coming into this season, especially after listening to Jimbo Fisher at SEC Media Days, hyping up his lines of scrimmage, that fantastic recruiting class, and some of the big names in that recruiting class too, right?
Evan Stewart. I thought Evan Stewart, he was like number one last year for his class. I thought he was going to bring it, but he had like five catches. And I didn't really see the number one in him.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting. You know, Evan Stewart, 5 receptions for 48 yards. He'd had an okay day. I think this was his second consecutive game with 5 catches. So, like you said, the number one recruit, kind of trying to show that off a little bit. But the rest of the team, not so much. Haynes King went 13 of 20 for 97 yards. And Chase Bryce, starting quarterback for Appalachian State, 15 for 30 for 134 yards and a touchdown. I think one of the biggest areas that kind of helped flip this game is turnovers. Texas A&M had 4 fumbles. They lost 2. It was just a really, again, not clean game from an SEC team that we had incredibly high expectations for in this season. They're at home in Kyle Field, number 6 team in the country, according to the AP, and, you know, they just flat out lost. It was really difficult. One of the things I will say about this team, and then I'm gonna ask your opinion, is Haynes King was named the starting quarterback this season for A&M. He was their starter last year but got injured. Zach Calzada ended up coming in and playing the rest of the season for them. But they had former LSU starter Max Johnson, who's done really well, come in and transfer to A&M. He fought with Haynes King this offseason. Would you expect Haynes King to continue being the starting quarterback at Texas A&M?
I think this whole season is going to be competition for that. But personally, yes.
You continue to see him. You know, I might be in agreement with you there. He does bring a dynamic run ability that I just don't think Max Johnson really has. And I especially think with this Jimbo Fisher offense, Jimbo Fisher being a guy who is still more of the run the football, let's not shoot the ball deep too often kind of offensive coach. Having a guy who can run the ball and run the ball effectively at the quarterback position is really important. I will say, though, heard reports that this true freshman class that you talked about with Evan Stewart, these guys, they're not happy either. And I'm curious, you know, with this transfer portal, could you see some of those top recruits leave Texas A&M if they continue to struggle this season?
Honestly, I feel like they might stay because a lot of them are freshmen and they're getting a lot of play time. And if they transfer to a lot of other schools, they're probably not going to get as much play time as they're intended to get.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, obviously, if you're a top recruit and you end up going to, you know, a major program and you're getting playing time and you're getting playing time on some of the biggest stages in college football, you know, I can't imagine what that Alabama A&M's going to be game is going to be. You know, I wouldn't be inclined to stick around too. You know, you're trying to develop and you're trying to get film out to these NFL scouts, because if you're a five-star recruit, probably the objective is to end up getting drafted by the NFL. And you've got guys like Evan Stewart who are getting playing time and are trying to make something with it. But ultimately, it ended up not working out for them. I got some interesting stats. Jayla has some interesting stats for us about this game. Total yardage.
Appalachian State had 315 yards and A&M had 186 yards.
Yikes. Yeah, that's a lot. Quick note here. We drop down to rushing yards. Appalachian State with 181.
And A&M with 89.
Yikes. App State's only 5 rush yards away from matching A&M's total offensive yards. That's got to hurt for Jimbo Fisher, you know, especially coming in this season with a lot of pressure. Signs the nation's number one recruiting class, the number one recruiting class in history, and they lose week 2 to Appalachian State. You know, the history there, 8-4, 9-3. You know, could we see another 8-4 season?
Does that make you think about the Texas A&M versus Alabama? What do you think?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting matchup to watch. I do like Texas A&M's defensive line. They've got some really good players there, some really good depth. And if Alabama's offensive line continues to have some of the same struggles that they've had against Texas, that could be a really difficult matchup for Alabama. They have some really good secondary players. Antonio Johnson is one of the nation's best slot corners and safeties. So, you know, the offense for Alabama needs to continue to improve. But if it does, I really like our chances.
I'm loving it. And then it's at home. It'll be a good game.
It'll be a good game. I'm hoping that the Alabama stadium looks something like the Texas stadium in Austin this weekend, because that was insane. And it made it really difficult on our team. And, you know, that's what we want. We want teams to hate coming to Alabama because they know they're going to have to deal with the stadium noise at Bryant-Denny, because Alabama fans show up in the best kind of way. Some more padlock stats for you guys. Time of possession. App State had close to 42 minutes. A&M close to 19. So Appalachian State, they own the game. I mean, they didn't go in. Yeah, they didn't go in and just barely scrape out a win. They dominated the rest of the game, held on to the ball for way longer than A&M could. And A&M just could not make the explosive plays that they had to catch up with App State. Passing yards, App State ended up with 134 yards, A&M 97 yards. Again, not even 100 yards in the air. A little interesting factoid for you. A&M's passing offense fell outside of the top 100 in the nation last year. And that's been something that Jimbo Fisher has been criticized of pretty often, is his inability to get some players down the field and those big play options in the passing game. But ultimately, App State, they get the win. I don't know if you saw the video.
This is a good game for them.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the video of Boone, North Carolina, the fans rushing out of the bars and the restaurants in their dorm rooms and like filling into the streets. I think someone
ended up, one of their best days.
Yeah, I think someone ended up like jumping on a car or two. It was insane. You know, I can't blame them though. Go in there. As
they probably went in there with the mindset thinking how we thought Texas A&M was going to kill them. And to come out on top, especially with a 17-14, that's a win.
Yeah, that was big for Appalachian State. Another big upset across college football. Marshall at Notre Dame. Marshall walks away with the win 26-21 against Notre Dame. Watching this game, again, I don't know how close it was, if it really was as close as the score indicates. 26-21 kind of suggests a very close game. To me, Marshall, they just kind of handled the game. You know, they had 145 yards in the air. You know, Tyler Buckner, the starting quarterback for Notre Dame, is also gets injured after throwing two picks, one of them being returned for a touchdown. So not a great day for Notre Dame. Here's another interesting fact for you. Marcus Freeman is 0-3 as Notre Dame's head coach. I don't know. You know, a lot of expectations for Notre Dame again this season. What are your takeaways from this game, and especially Marcus Freeman going 0-3 as a head coach? Do you honestly think he is the guy for the job?
I feel as if each season a coach has one game that will test their ability of if we think that position's for them. And this just might be that game that was the test for them early on in the season. But I do.
Yeah, you know, I also will echo that sentiment because right now Notre Dame is sitting in the top five in recruiting according to CBS's 24/7 Sports. And when you recruit like that, which is something Brian Kelly never did at Notre Dame, I think ultimately you're going to end up seeing a lot better success on the field because you're going to have higher quality players, higher caliber players. But this is definitely not a great start for Marcus Freeman's tenure at Notre Dame. They were currently number 8 in the country. I think they're a bit overrated, and I know we talk about Notre Dame being overrated every year. They might be a bit overrated this year.
Do you think you'll see them in the top 10 after this?
Top 10? I'm not so sure. You know, I'm not so sure. Perhaps, probably not. You know, and we'll get into the AP poll later on in the show, just so that way. You know what? Let's do it now. Let's get into the AP poll. We'll kind of break some things down. So after this weekend, Georgia has climbed to the number one spot, 33-0 victory over Samford out of Birmingham, not Stanford. You know, sometimes those two can get confused. So Samford out of Birmingham, Georgia scored 30 points in the first half and then had a field goal throughout the second half. So definitely a dominant win for Georgia. I kind of agree with Georgia being number one. And then at the number two spot, you see our Alabama Crimson Tide. Number three, Ohio State. And number four, Michigan. So I'm interested to get your thoughts. The top four includes two SEC teams and two Big Ten teams. No other conference is represented in the top four, which is projected to be a playoff team. So there's a lot of talk about these super conferences and the Big Ten and the SEC sort of taking over. Are we seeing that now in this season?
Honestly, shockingly, we are seeing them be able to take over, because to say that Ohio State is number three, or looking at the AP polls compared to last season, compared to this year, is just Georgia and Alabama. I knew they were going to be the top, like, 1-2. But I didn't see Ohio State being 3 and so on and so forth.
You know, I liked Ohio State coming in this season. They have a lot of excellent pieces on their offense. Their defense has been their Achilles heel for the past several years. They bring in Jim Knowles, the former defensive coordinator for Oklahoma State. I think that was an excellent move. So to see Ohio State at 3 this season, I don't think is too big of a shock to me now after watching them play. They're going to have a dynamic offense when they get all their wide receivers healthy. They've struggled to keep some of them healthy. Jackson Smith and Jigba, their top guy, has suffered an injury and has been out past game and will probably be out this upcoming game. But they have a deep, deep wide receiver room with a lot of talented guys. So, you know, we will continue to monitor that offense. We are about to head to break, and we will continue with the breakdown of this AP poll and all of the moving and shaking that has happened since the hectic Saturday that we just had after a short break.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Welcome back, Tuscaloosa. I am your host, Aiden McGuirk, and I'm here with the lovely Jayla Mines on the student section. All right, so when we went to break last, we were talking about the new AP poll that came out after what was a hectic Saturday, full of some major upsets, some close calls. Georgia, number one, Alabama, Ohio State, and Michigan rounding out the top four. Coming in at number five, Clemson. That's the first team outside of the Big Ten and the SEC. Again, those two super conferences that people are talking about. At number six, we have Oklahoma, the first Big 12 team. Number seven, USC. Up three spots from last week after their dominant win. Lincoln Riley doing a very good job at USC. That offense looks electric. They have a ton of great skill position players. I am interested to see how that defense continues to grow. They're hopeful for a Pac-12 championship. And when you have teams like Utah and potentially Oregon, I think they're going to need that defense later on in the season. Coming in at number eight, Oklahoma State. Number nine, Kentucky, up 11 spots after their victory over Florida this past Saturday. And rounding out the top 10, you have Arkansas, up six spots after their victory over South Carolina. So
I think Kentucky and Arkansas, we're going to see them move up. I think they're going to have a good season.
Yeah, I really like Arkansas. You know, when you look at their schedule, it's kind of hard to say that any team at this point, including Alabama, is unbeatable. You know, going into the season, you had a team like Texas A&M on their schedule where you kind of thought that's probably a loss. Not so sure now. Texas A&M can't get it done, unfortunately, against Appalachian State. I feel like Arkansas feels pretty good about that matchup. And then, of course, Alabama goes on the road to Arkansas, and they saw what Alabama was unable to do on the road in Texas, and you know that stadium in Arkansas is going to be electric, and they are going to make it very difficult for players.
They're going to make sure that they have the fan base, the crowd control, everything.
Yeah. I completely agree. Arkansas, they did it last year against Texas. They're going to do it this year against Alabama for sure. Moving on, Michigan State, number 11. Michigan State's kind of flying under the radar right now. They had an excellent season last year. Kenneth Walker III was a guy who ended up being one of the top 10 finalists for a Heisman Trophy. But you don't replace a guy like Kenneth Walker. And I honestly do not expect Michigan State to be what they were last year. But Mel Tucker has done an excellent job getting guys in the transfer portal, and I think that they will continue to be a quality team. BYU up 9 spots after their victory over last year's Big 12 champion, Baylor. BYU making a statement going in there, beating a team that we all had high expectations for. BYU is set to join the Big 12 with Baylor in the coming years. And I think that they are proving that they can run with the big dogs. 13, Miami, Florida, with new head coach Mario Cristobal, formerly of Oregon, up 2 spots. That next week, they're taking on Texas A&M. Ooh, that's going to be a game that I'm very interested to watch. Florida, Miami, Florida, and Texas A&M. Miami goes on the road to Kyle Field, so that'll be very interesting. Utah coming in at number 14. They are the first non-undefeated team with a 1-1 record. Obviously, that season opener loss to Florida that kind of set national media on fire with Anthony Richardson's play. 15, you have Tennessee up 9 spots after their victory in overtime against last year's ACC championship winner, Pittsburgh. 16, North Carolina State up 2 spots. And then 17, we see them drop all the way down 8 spots after their loss to BYU. Florida rounding out the top 18. Wake Forest 2-0 after their victory against Vanderbilt. Having their starting quarterback back, Sam Hartman, is tremendous for Wake Forest. They have an excellent skill position group, and Sam Hartman is a phenomenal quarterback. I think the expectations are very high for Wake Forest now that he is back. And then Ole Miss, 2-0, up 2 spots to 20. Texas, 21. Penn State sitting at 22. Again, Pittsburgh still in the top 25. They dropped 6 spots after that loss to Tennessee. 24. This is by far the biggest mover here. A&M dropping 18 spots from number 6 to 24 after that loss to Appalachian State at home. And then 25 is Oregon. Still struggling to hang on in the top 25 after that embarrassing loss to Georgia in week 1. So that is the current AP top 25 moves every single week. So we will continue to update you every Monday about what's happening with the AP top 25. Some quick talking points, though. J.J. McCarthy has been named the starting quarterback for Michigan after going 11 for 12 for 229 yards and 3 TDs against Hawaii in week 2. I thought that was a very interesting approach that John Harbaugh took, starting one quarterback for the first game and then starting another quarterback for the second game to see who would do better, and then ultimately awarding the quarterback that won.
I think coaches often do that a lot. Like, you see them when there's a competition for a certain spot and then they kind of see the leeway with the game, that's when a lot of people get their chance to, like, prove themselves.
Yeah, I completely agree. Kind of saw that this game with, I think, our DBs. You know, you had some guys in the secondary struggle. Some younger guys came in and did really well. Yep. So I think that we could see a different starting lineup for the secondary for Alabama. Another major talking point, Scott Frost has been fired as the head coach of Nebraska. Very interesting timing, because 3 weeks from now, Scott Frost's buyout would have decreased a significant amount. Nebraska is having to pay him over $7 million to leave the program. He is the first head coach to be fired this season after his 45-42 loss to Georgia Southern. So that is what has been happening across the landscape of college football. Now heading in for our last 10 minutes here to some NFL stuff. The week 1 matchup Thursday night of the Los Angeles Rams and the Buffalo Bills. I got to tell you, that did not go the way I anticipated.
That wasn't a game. That was their ball the whole time.
Yeah.
Whole time.
That was definitely, again, not the way I anticipated. But, you know, I think Buffalo wanted to make a statement, and they did. They beat former Super Bowl champions or reigning Super Bowl champions.
Shock everyone.
31-10. That was a dominant performance. Josh Allen, 26-31 for 292 yards. He had 9.6 average, 3 touchdowns. He did throw 2 picks, which I thought was pretty interesting. Josh Allen threw 2 picks, and Matthew Stafford threw 3 interceptions. That was honestly very difficult to watch. He had some excellent play by both of these secondaries. Matthew Stafford went up 29-41 for 191 yards, so a little over 100 yards less in the air. And then you had 5.9 average with the tutty and 3 interceptions again. That was a blowout. The Bills went into the Rams' house at SoFi, and they made a statement that they are Super Bowl contenders this year. You saw the difference in rushing, 121 yards off 25 carries for the Bills versus 52 yards off of 18 carries for the Rams. Yeah.
It just makes you wonder, like, these were the Super Bowl winners last year.
Yeah, that's a great point because, you know, when you look at the NFC East, you kind of thought the Rams have a very clear path here to take the NFC East again and potentially make it to the Super Bowl yet again. They return arguably the best wide receiver in the country with Cooper Kupp. They have arguably the best defensive player with Aaron Donald. They're an incredibly expensive team, that's for sure. They're playing an ungodly amount for all of these superstar players, but you just didn't see them show up. You know, I felt like the wide receivers for the Los Angeles Rams, it wasn't there. Cooper Kupp, obviously their leading receiver, 13 receptions for 128 yards with 1 touchdown. The next leading receiver was their tight end, Tyler Higbee, with 5 receptions for 39 yards. Allen Robinson was a big pickup for them this offseason. He only had 1 catch for 12 yards. So kind of interesting to see what they do there in terms of their pass game. Sean McVay is a brilliant offensive coach, and I'm sure that he's going to have that offense figured out going into next season. Going to the Alabama Bowl, Mac Jones and the New England Patriots took on Tua Tagovailoa and the Miami Dolphins. Tua and Jalen Waddle ended up coming up victorious with a 20-7 win over Mac Jones and the New England Patriots. I really like Miami this year. I think Tua is going to finally prove all of the haters wrong. There's been a doubt that he's not an elite quarterback in the league, and I think they have a new offensive coach. They've improved at wide receiver. They've improved at offensive line. So I'm very excited for them.
I think you kind of see people taking over in the NFL as far as even with college football, like Ohio State being in the top 4, and just how you just said the Miami's are doing really good this year. So it's like you see these new coaches, and then you see the new recruiting teams, the new players, and you just wonder, like, are they going to bring it like how last year's did? And a lot of people have been dominating, and then a lot of people haven't.
Yeah, both Ohio State and Miami are showing some tremendous improvement from last year. And they both have elite offensive head coaches. So I don't know, maybe there's something to that. Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, man, that was a tight game. Pittsburgh ended up winning in overtime 23-20 over Cincinnati and Joe Burrow, who lost in the Super Bowl last season. I gotta say, I'm not so high on the Bengals this year, but that is yet to be seen. Obviously, Chicago beating San Francisco 19-10 was a tremendous upset. Nobody, including myself, thought anything of Chicago, and San Francisco has a Super Bowl roster, but they could not get it done in week one. Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith, though, coming up with the victory 38 over the Detroit Lions 35. I think that was an excellent game. Obviously, their new weapon there in Philadelphia, A.J. Brown, 10 receptions for 155 yards with a 15.5-yard average. Had a long of 54 yards in the air. So they're going to throw the ball around a lot more this season. I was interested to see, though, that DeVonta Smith did not get a single catch. And you know how good DeVonta Smith is.
One of the best.
At that wide receiver position. Former Heisman Trophy winner. Atlanta blew a big lead again against New Orleans. New Orleans ended up winning 27-26. Cleveland ended up taking down their former starter quarterback, Baker Mayfield, in Carolina, 26-24. Brian Daboll, former Alabama offensive coordinator, is now the head coach of the New York Giants, and he goes to Tennessee, the former one seed in the AFC, and gets the victory 21-20. So I'm very excited to see what Brian Daboll can do in New York. Have great offensive skill position group, Saquon Barkley, love Kadarius Toney, Sterling Shepard, Kenny Galladay, Wandell Robinson. So we'll be looking to see what they do. Wandell Robinson, quick note, was injured in this game. It's unclear about when he will be back. Green Bay, though, boy, they lose their best wide receiver, Davante Adams, and they only score one touchdown in the whole game. They ended up coming up short to Minnesota. Final score was 23-7. Tonight, you've got Russell Wilson back in Seattle taking on his former team as a Denver Bronco. You got any predictions before we sign off?
I thought so far, I just checked the score. It was 7-3, which is shocking because I thought Denver was going to win. And I think a lot of other people, we still have the whole game, but just to see how they're not like leading right now, it's kind of shocking.
Yeah, I think that they may change, but Pete Carroll and that team, they're probably coming at Russell with everything that they've got. So we are going to sign off. Denver 3, Seattle 7 at halftime. Thank you so much for tuning into the student section. I've been Aiden McGuirk with the lovely Jayla Mines, and we will see you next week.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.